Everyone, you've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and our Paradigm Shifter tonight is going to blow your hair back as if you're in a windstorm. Linda Sherman of Soothsayer.com is she's been on the show several times before and has really invigorated in us the astrological relationship to the crazy political and economic antics that are all a part of the Great Shift. So welcome to the show, Linda Sherman.
Well, thank you, Veronica. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
It's always a delight to catch up with you, although you really make me think. Of course, that's a good thing. So I want to say, what's up we keep hearing about all this incredible deception that's going on, whether it's from the Murdoch papers or the Goldman Sachs, which isn't exactly new. I heard some pretty interesting stuff about Australia, which was debt-free 3 years ago and is now just laden with debt and all kinds of pipelines that are taking out their energy reserves, their natural gas, and so on. And all this stuff's happening all so fast. What's going on?
Well, I think it took a long time. It seems to us that a lot of things are happening so fast now because the system is giving out, is collapsing. Sovereign wealth is collapsing in nations, as you may have heard on the news. The European Union, the euro dollar, is in major trouble because of all the nations who have virtually declared bankruptcy. Ireland, Portugal, Greece, Italy, all of these nations got into trouble with the subprime mortgages that were financialized and sold throughout the world, and many nations got their sovereign wealth into derivatives and bad contracts, and the whole world became a casino.
So how did that, where did that start?
Well, I think you could say that the United States was at the center of it. People over here, the entities like Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, and these giant financial entities, which have been financing campaigns and influencing our government for years in a major way, to the point where the economy became basically deregulated. Laws were passed starting under Ronald Reagan, but accelerating actually under Bill Clinton. For instance, the Glass-Steagall Act, which had been in force since the last Great Depression under Franklin Roosevelt, had separated commercial lending banking from financial banking, which has to do with investing and speculation and all of that. So you
and the point of that was so that you couldn't, the banks couldn't do that kind of speculation.
Exactly.
Right?
The commercial lending banks, like the bank around the corner that gives you your mortgage or finances or lends money to small businesses or whatever. All of a sudden, they had the freedom to go into anything they pretty much wanted to do in terms of trading, investing, and it resulted, and then that was one thing that happened. In 1999, they passed a law, essentially a series of laws, getting rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, which had separated those two types of institutions. institutions because the Depression, in part of 1929, the crash was caused by the massive bank failures. The banks just went under because of this kind of speculation and mortgage lending that was unfounded or unsound. Secondly, they had what is called the Commodities Modernization Act, which was a real wonderful term to take regulations off derivatives trades. Now, many people don't know a derivative from a hole in the ground, a derivative contract. Derivatives are when traders get into very complex contracts that are essentially bets. And there's two types of bets. There's a call, which is a bet that an entity will rise, like a stock, a commodity, a currency. You can bet on anything. You can bet on the weather. A call is a bet that that will gain in value. A put is a bet that it will lose in value, that it will go down. So you're not buying a stock or you're not buying a commodity. You're not investing in anything. You're betting on something. Again, in 1999, this so-called Commodities Modernization Act took all this regulation off of this derivatives trade, which up to then had been more modest and contained and controlled, mainly with farm commodities involved with it. But they took the lid off of it, and today, to give you a concept, there's at least $700 trillion in derivatives contracts today.
So that's investment in nothing, really.
Right. It's a bet. It's just casino. It's a betting operation. Mm. Now, there was an attempt in 2009, 2010 with what was called the Dodd-Frank Act to re-regulate this derivatives trade because much of it wasn't even traded over real exchanges. It was called over-the-counter derivatives. There was an attempt to trade and to try to tax these. They're so complex they're not really taxed. Much of the money is in hedge funds that are offshored. So when we talk about, when the Democrats talk about, well, we've got to tax the millionaires and billionaires, a lot of it has to do with these huge amounts of money that are made in these trades, in these operations. And they're just killing the global economy. That's where the money is going. Banks are not lending money to small businesses or to people to buy houses anymore. The banks are all tied up with these bad loans that they have made, and some of which were downright illegal. So the long and the short of it, we could go on all night describing what went on with massive deregulation of the banking system and the financial world, enabling a handful of plutocrats to make huge amounts of money at everybody else's expense. So
pretty
now
scary.
We're paying the piper, and most people didn't even know what was going on, because what goes on at Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase is so distanced from anything that the public is aware of. That most people can't even relate to this, and yet all these toxic loans, all these bad mortgage loans have gone all over the world. They went into sovereign wealth funds. They went to Greece, they went to Ireland, they went to Italy, they went to Portugal, and now you know what has happened to those countries.
Mm-hmm. Before we go any farther, I want you to tell people that you are indeed an astrologer. So are you getting all this information through astrological material?
No. Basically, what astrology does is, what we do in astrology is we look at the positions that planets were in, the signs that they were in, and the aspects that they held to one another in past historic eras. And we look back and we say, well, what was going on then with the major societies or civilizations during these periods? Were wars going on? Were depressions happening? What was going on previously? And then we can say, well, these cycles that hit, we're likely to re-experience within the context of our modern lives what went on before. For instance, with this, we look at Pluto's transit through Capricorn. Well, the last two cycles was the Protestant Reformation in Europe, and then the last one was the American Revolution. The last time Uranus was in Aries and squared to Pluto, as it is now, was the Great Depression of the 1930s. So that my conclusion was that there was going to be a massive sense of corruption of people in very great positions of power, and that there was going to be a systemic failure and another Great Depression leading to the second American Revolution, which I predicted would start this year in 2011.
So we're looking at Occupy Wall Street. Now, we have a caller.
Occupy Wall Street is the most hopeful occurrence that we currently have, and I think it's going to lead us eventually to getting our democracy back, reforming this nation, but it's going to take a long time. But I have a great belief that this is going to become more cohesive. They're going to have a specific list of goals and demands that they're making in mind, and I think they're going to form a viable third party which will displace one of the present parties.
Would you mind answering somebody's call right now? There's somebody waiting, and I'm excited about Occupy Wall Street as well, so thank you for that.
Yes, very much so.
We have a caller there. You're on the air.
Oh, great. This is Kathy calling from Bellingham.
Hi, Kathy.
You mentioned Goldman Sachs, and what's happening in this area is Goldman Sachs, as well as, I can't remember the name of the other party, there may be more, are proposing coal trains to come through Bellingham and then building a deep water port for coal to be shipped on huge tankers that go to China. And I guess some of these tankers are so big they don't allow them in the Panama Canal. And of course Goldman Sachs doesn't live here. And I'm just wondering, astrologically, do you see this happening? I mean, they propose huge trains with 20 cars or 100 cars going through this area. Do you see anything astrologically there?
Yeah, Goldman Sachs is so rich and so powerful, and they've been behind so much evil that has been done. They're heavily invested in fossil fuels, oil, gas, and coal. They're very heavily into this. And Goldman Sachs is not a coal company. It's a big, enormously powerful and wealthy financial corporation.
No, but I read that China's building a coal plant one a week.
Yes. Now, the interesting thing about China is most of their electricity is coal-powered, and yet China's also the leading developer now of solar panels. They're trying to go in all directions, but China is trying to buy up huge amounts of commodities.
Natural resources.
Areas in which commodities are abundant, whether it's coal or oil, or gas, or whatever it is. And Goldman Sachs is involved.
Right, and they want to take it from Montana and bring it here. So it's kind of like none of us are. We have to live with the consequences of these money managers. And do you see that happening astrologically in this
area? That's a very good question. It's not something I have looked into. I would have to look at a lot of astrological charts, which I currently do not have, to determine whether an event like that. I would say that there's only two things that's going to stop it, the federal government and your state government.
Hmm.
And unfortunately,
I don't see that happening.
The campaigns of our people in Washington are financed by Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase and the big corporate monopolies.
Hang on a sec. You'll get your turn in just a moment. You're going to have a lot of callers, miss.
Wow. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathy. That's a big question, isn't it? You have another caller. Are you ready for that?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Yes, hello, Veronica. Hello, Linda. This is Andrea.
Hello. Hi, Andrea.
From Marysville. Hi. I have finally decided to call and dial in. And, Linda, I have a question for you. I was reading your newsletter, and I have to say, for December, and I was, actually, I really liked it because it wasn't sugar-coated. It was just straightforward. Astrologically, looking in 2012, I do have to say, and I don't know if people feel this way, but I don't really foresee anything all that good as far as like feeling it in my bones, you know. For some reason, I just feel sometimes, even when I listen to people who do talk about future, they say, oh, it's going to be okay, we're going to have an uprising and it's going to be all great. But honestly, just being informed and listening to the news that I always do and from various sources, I feel that, for instance, the next Christmas or holiday season or whatever you might call it, it's going to be actually even more difficult for the ordinary person. Is there anything like that that you may see?
Andrea,
I see where I live.
Say, I absolutely agree with your bones, what your bones are telling you. Yes, it's going to get very, very tough. This is a very seriously difficult series of historic cycles that you and I are living through and all the rest of the people are living through. I feel that the economy will be getting worse rather than better, that Washington will still be relatively stalemated, that there is no way we can fix the massive, massive debt that most of the world has incurred. The powerful people are still in power. It is going to take, this is my timeline. I feel that that the bottom of this depression, and that's what we are in, a depression, not a recession, is around 2020. And by 2024 to 2026, we will be on a whole new what you would say paradigm, to use Veronica's title for this wonderful show that she has. The paradigm will have shifted. We will have a brand new source of energy, which is probably being discovered or invented now as we speak under the Uranus-Pluto square. The last time Uranus and Pluto were square was when the atom was split in Germany in March, I think, of 1933. And we have that square going on now. And I think there's going to be new technologies and inventions which are going to completely displace coal, oil, gas, or all fossil fuels. We'll have a centralized source of almost virtually endless energy, and that will change everything. We fought wars. Economies have risen and fall based on fossil fuel. And where the energy lies, the entire industrial revolution, our entire civilization has been built upon cheap energy. Now, the global climate has been so altered, and the acceleration of severity in climate change due to the burning of fossil fuels is becoming so serious that these breakthroughs cannot happen soon enough. But I agree with you that we have tough times to go through. And I do not pull any punches in my newsletters, in my book, What Next, which was published in 2007. And I'm writing my second book now that hopefully will be published by the end of 2012. I believe that we're in historic cyclical changes in which very powerful people have pretty much taken over, transnational capitalists and bankers have taken over the world, are using it as their private roulette wheels and devastating the climate and the lives of most people on this planet. I believe also that they, because of that Pluto-Uranus square, revolutions will take place. These people will fall on their swords, and eventually we will see the light of day. we will see great changes that will take place. We will get our democracy back, which we no longer have.
Is it revolutions like what was going on in the Middle East or still is going on in the Middle East?
It'll vary from place. I find it so interesting that this revolution began in Tunisia and Egypt and spread to Libya. These were the original places where civilization as we know it began over 5,000 years ago. And it's interesting, the end of the Maya long count in December 21st of 2012, a little over 5,100 years, really corresponds with the beginning of civilization in Egypt and the Mesopotamian Crescent, where these revolutions are going on now. Don't you find that interesting?
Yeah, it is interesting, yeah.
So I feel that there will be revolutions, but the way they will eventually, there's always, revolutions have a very bad track record for the most part. People get involved in war and violence and killing and devastation and everything, but I feel the revolution over here is not going to have so much of that, but it's going to take a long time. I think the Occupy Wall Street movement, as I said, will become a third political party, and eventually we will get our democracy back. We will have a more egalitarian economy. In the meantime, for those of us that feel that are realistically facing the really tough times of the Great Depression that lie ahead of us and climate change, and next year I feel some tectonic events of major consequence are going to occur, especially one in the spring of 2012, I believe, on the West Coast, in the area of San Francisco. A major earthquake could occur there. These things are very, very tough to deal with, but ultimately they're about toppling the old forces and getting rid of the inequities and the selfish, narcissistic behavior and those people being propelled to the top of the food chain. Ultimately, I'm optimistic that by the 2020s that we will have learned a great deal from this and we're going to move toward a much, much better way of life and civilization.
What are the revolutionary planets? Does that answer your question, Andrea, or do you have more to ask? And I was just wondering what the planets are that gear us to.
Well, speaking of Occupy, I don't know. Again, I'm just doing it more how I feel, maybe from experience. I feel like maybe the movement may be used by, I don't know how should I say, but it could be misused somehow. So I think we need to be cautious, because the whole movement of Occupy can be misused by, by these people in power to kind of say, it's like a pacifier. Here you have a pacifier, be happy. Look at that, Occupy is active. But I just feel like we still need to be very cautious, what we believe.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. They're not going to solve everything overnight. It's going to be a process that takes place over a number of years, and they're going to morph, as I said, into a viable political party. One of their first proposals that they're making is that we take all private money out of political campaigns. There's a group that has written a constitutional amendment to do this. And I signed on to it on the internet. I think it's called getmoneyout.com. You can go in and sign the petition, and something like over 300,000 people have already signed it, and it's been online maybe for 3 weeks.
Wow.
I think this is going to be a major thing.
What were you saying earlier? It's $1 billion to run for office?
Yes. It will cost President Obama $1 billion for his campaign this year.
My God.
And he's, unfortunately, in order to run a campaign and raise this, you've got to be in bed with the devil. You have to make a Faustian bargain with Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase and the pharmaceutical companies and the oil companies and the gas companies, that you won't raise their taxes, that you'll keep subsidizing them and bailing them out, that you will not regulate them, et cetera, et cetera. And then they'll contribute the money to your campaign so you can get elected. Washington is corrupt to the nth degree. Not everyone there is corrupt, but most of them are. It is tragic. They're owned by the transnational corporations and banks.
But remember with Enron, there was a woman that tipped that one upside down. Aren't there, planetarily speaking, aren't there influences that can actually shift something that looks like a power out of control the way that one, you know, that was just an example?
Yes. Well, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act was passed, you know, after Enron and WorldCom and those things, and should have been enforced with the banks.
What's it called?
It wasn't. Sarbanes-Oxley was an important act after the collapse of Enron and WorldCom that was passed in the Bush years with the Democratic Congress that supposedly would create transparency. What was Enron? It was a derivatives operation, and it lost a whole lot of money in derivatives, which they hid. From view, they didn't let anybody know all this money that they had lost. Mm. It was a lack of transparency. So you have to report. You have to be transparent. Well, according to that law, I don't know whether you saw 60 Minutes on Sunday. It was a fantastic report on, I believe it was Bank of America, the whistleblower. You know, you mentioned this gal that blew the whistle on Enron. The whistleblower came forward and reported that all of these mortgages were bad. By 2005, 60% of the mortgages that they had were bad mortgages. And by 2006, it was 80%. And Robert Rubin, who was formerly the Secretary of the Treasury under Clinton, was one of the executives at the time. He reported to him, this guy who was the auditor for the bank itself reported all this, and he was simply fired.
And hang on one sec, we have a caller. So caller, if you just wait just a moment, we'll get to you. Sorry, go ahead, Linda.
Yes, and then I don't know whether any of you people listening to the show saw 60 Minutes. I happened to watch. It was a fantastic report on what actually went on at that time, and he reported it also to the legal agency arm of the SEC, who claimed how honest they were and how upfront they were, and he reported to them too, and they didn't listen. They said, "Oh, well, he couldn't absolutely report that the heads of the bank knew what was going on." And he said, I beg to differ. I had the emails, I had the letter, I had the correspondence and everything that I reported to them multiple times. And so you see that the bank itself was corrupt. The government entity that's supposed to regulate them or monitor them under Sarbanes-Oxley was also corrupt. It turned the other way. Our present Secretary of the Treasury, I'm fond of calling it, Timothy Geithner, was head of the New York Federal Reserve all those years that all this stuff was going on. And I called him the great enabler.
Hmm.
They weren't watching. They deliberately turned their backs on all of this stuff that was going on.
Hmm. I like you call him Secretary of Treachery. Should we take our caller right now? I mean, I don't like to interrupt you, but we've got a caller, so.
Yes.
Hello, you're on the air.
Okay, Linda, this is Kathy again, and I just wanted to add to what you just said. In the publication called The Week, December 9th, on page 42, it states, banks, trillions in secret loans from the Fed. U.S. banks made an estimated $13 billion in profit thanks to secret loans from the Federal Reserve during the financial crisis. It also states that the Fed's
Kathy, have you got have you got media on behind you? Something's talking behind you.
This is Kathy again.
Oh, there we go. How's that?
Better.
Is that better?
Thank you.
The Fed provided big banks with $7.8 trillion in loans and other guarantees without Congress knowledge between August 2007 and March 2009, even as lawmakers fiercely fought over the troubled asset relief programs. And that's in the week, December 9th, page 42. And that just ties in exactly with what you said. That
exactly, and you're exactly right. I read that item. I did read that item over the internet. Yeah, 7. Whatever.
7.8 trillion.
7.8, almost $8 trillion
loans.
Exactly, was forked under the table from the Federal Reserve to bail these entities out. Yes.
Wow.
Can you imagine
the biggest U.S. banks?
If we put that money into our current, that they're screaming about, in our budget deficits, we wouldn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
If that money were put into our government coffers to save our nation, we wouldn't have those deficits. And these same people who are receiving that money are the executives of these financial institutions who are making millions and millions of dollars in bonuses. And they have not been fired or let go. They're still there, and they're making giant bonuses, and they're offshoring most of their profits, so they're paying little or no taxes on them.
And they're squeezing out education and services.
What about Obama in all of this? He seems so inept, and he's now saying, gee, the middle class is in a tough position. No kidding. He helped put us there, where he doesn't seem to stand up to anything. And it's like he's bought and delivered. So astrologically, what do you see with that? And then I'll get off the air.
It's interesting because President Obama's chart is very similar to the chart of Herbert Hoover, if it gives you an idea. Herbert Hoover and Obama were decent men who came from nowhere, had nothing, and made something out of themselves. You got to give them credit. My feeling about President Obama is he came into office absolutely terminally naive about the global financial system and the American companies, such, you know, the big banks. I don't think he knew anything about it, and so he hired the evil
entities like Lawrence
Summers.
The same people that created the problem.
Yeah, he hired people who created the problem, like Summers and Geithner. He had always taken the established routes throughout his life in order to succeed. So he took whoever was the in group. He was also financed at the end of his campaign heavily by Goldman Sachs. They threw in a lot of money at the very end. I think there was two things. He was terminally naive and didn't know what he was doing, was very inexperienced. And secondly, he made a Faustian bargain in order to raise the money to run and to get elected.
But to run what?
To run for office.
You know,
Then he had the Republicans stopping him at every single turn along the way.
Well, he's on a hamster wheel, isn't he?
And he backed away.
Yeah, and he did. He backed down. He should have channeled Teddy Roosevelt that would stand up and say, make my day. Or Franklin Roosevelt would say, the rich hate me and I welcome their hatred. You know, he should have really used the bully pulpit to stand up for the people. But he knew he would be brought down. He would be brought down by these.
Yeah, and he won't. But so astrologically, is he fitting in with his chart in the U.S. chart?
Yes, well, in many ways.
I've
written about Obama on a number of my newsletters concerning his astrological chart and the chart of the USA. I think that the only way he's going to get reelected is by default. And with what the Republicans have got, he may very well get reelected because they're the worst lineup I've ever seen in my entire life.
But isn't it disappointing? Isn't it so disappointing?
It's more than disappointing. It's almost obscene. I mean, we have Newt Gingrich, who's now the front runner, who proposes that our children should be janitors in the schools, that they should fire all the janitors and have the kids do the work. And he proposed back in the 1990s we should bring back orphanages, get rid of the whole social welfare system and bring back orphanages. I mean, the things that he has said are beyond belief, beyond belief.
And you said people are getting excited about him anyway.
Yes.
What's happening to American people? What is happening? And what does that show astrologically?
When you have an economic crisis and a takeover of what I call the plutocracy or the corporatocracy, you have this takeover. It took about 30 years, but they took over America. And you have a Great Depression like the one we're experiencing now, and people do not know what hit them. They don't understand it. They don't comprehend how they got there. They're looking around for scapegoats. And right now the scapegoat are elderly people, disabled people, children and young people, everybody who is in some way needy or in need of some kind of, that need to have Social Security, that need to have health care, that need to have support.
Education.
And they're looking at immigrants as, they're blaming immigrants, they're blaming people of different races and religions. They're all looking around to throw rocks at each other and look for a scapegoat. It's as old as human history itself. And that's what tends to happen psychologically when your system breaks down. You lose your job, you lose your house, your children lose their future, and you look around you, you don't know what hit you, so you look around for blame. I mean, Newt Gingrich, just a few months ago, or the end of last year, was talking about Sharia law. We've got to guard against Sharia law rising in this country, you know. And he was saying that Obama wasn't born here, you know. He was talking, you know, this guy is out of his gourd. And he is the front runner in the Democrat. And look at how Rick Perry brought himself down, not even knowing what the voting age was. I mean, these people are ignorant, just absolutely, or like Gingrich, just so a big helium balloon full of ego and idiocy.
You know what's happening astrologically? So is it? I guess what I'm thinking as you talk, it's like all the big systems which have now become flagrantly global are looking like they're made of rot or torn string or something in a certain way. It's like everything has to change. What's happening? Is this the shift? Is the shift pushing us as individuals to grow into a deeper kind of a more, as you called it, transparent, more self-aware and self-able to design a life better? Is that it? Is that what the whole shift is astrologically?
I think it can be. I don't know that any of us have an absolute about that, that humans are going to magically transform into these great higher entities. I happen to prefer that belief. It's a preference, not a statement. I happen to prefer the notion that when we get through to the other side of this civilization breaking down, of the evil entities revealing themselves, falling on their own swords, of suffering the consequences, the tragic consequences on a worldwide basis that we're going to be suffering from a breakdown of the economy and starvation and severe climate change that has been primarily due to human use of fossil fuel. When we get to that
or greed and fossil fuel, huh?
Yes, and greed, exactly. And when we get to a certain point, that there will be like the 100th monkey syndrome. There will be enough enlightened people who care about each other, that wish to live cooperatively with each other and in concert with the earth, who will have a greater sense of human responsibility to life on earth itself and to each other, and will have a greatly enhanced spiritual life. I like to think And I prefer to think that that's where we're going. And I think it's a good possibility that that's where we're going. But I don't know that any of us have the absolute answer to that.
So what do you recommend as we're facing this? It's like we don't want to... I have two questions, actually. One is you talk about them falling on their swords. If we're going to get really depressed and we're going to get hungry, or the world, the hunger thing is going to grow like mad, is that going to be experienced by some of these people in the plutocracy? And, oh, goody, we have another caller. Is that going to be experienced by them, or do they have their wonderful little bunkers and their greenhouse living or whatever?
They do. I think it's like the Bush family that bought up this thousands of acres of land over major aquifers in Uruguay. A lot of them, in years ago, I predicted that these guys would flee the country like Nazi war criminals and go to South America, and that's where they're going.
Oh.
Ironically, they're in Panama, Argentina, Costa Rica, some of them, and in Uruguay and Paraguay and these. No, I don't really think. I think the biggest problem is they are who they are. They have to live with themselves. They have to experience. We like to think, oh, it would be really just if they were brought into court and went to jail for the rest of their lives. And some of them may wind up like Bernie Madoff, you know, going to jail, and others may not. Others may be disgraced, like Rupert Murdoch. There will be a variety of consequences for these people. But I'm not so concerned about that. I think that because we're all going to be living on the planet together. And the consequences of climate change, the consequences of so many things, are going to eventually hit these people in differing ways.
We do have a caller. We better have that caller on before we get too excited about this part.
Yes.
You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Linda. Hi, Veronica. This is Andrea again.
Oh, hi, Andrea.
Twice. But I want to just say thank you for what you were talking about, and I had a little moment, and I researched Newt Gingrich and the janitors.
Yes.
And I read in The Atlantic, and I have to say to all the callers that are actually listening, you know, I have a almost 10-year-old son, and this really, really, really just angered me.
Yes.
And I have some people that are still on the fence. They still believe, oh, yeah, you know, it's not so bad. It's not so bad. You know, things are still okay. You know, when people in politics start to talk about, you know, something so stupid like this about janitors and children, you know, we need to pass the information on. And so anytime I think whenever I'm reading an article and I feel like it's important to pass on, I will, because I think, you know, if this particular person will get elected, I think we're in major trouble. I think it's not going to be 2020. I think it's going to be 2030 or 2050 before we recover. And I think it's very important that people know, because we have one chance, and that's this coming year. And if this will not work, then perhaps, you know, our children will be the janitors, and janitors will be, you know, not even on unemployment, but probably living, you know, in a cardboard box under the bridge. So,
exactly.
Linda, thank you
Yes, exactly.
Thank you for
true.
Again. Thank you for this program, and I really hope that more and more people will be listening and really opening their eyes. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea.
That's actually good. So one of the biggest things she's talking about is something you're talking about as well, which is wake up and pay attention, isn't it?
Exactly true. This is my thing, and I do want to get to the better part of these predictions, as dire, is that we can do something about it. We can support the Occupy movement. One of the callers said they're afraid of the Occupy movement may be infiltrated by people. There's always, in every single movement, there's always people on the fringe that are extremists. in the movements in New York City and everything, there were some people who were drug addicts and alcoholics on the fringes, and there were anarchists that created problems when with the Occupy demonstration in Rome. That's part of the risk that you take, and that will always be there. I mean, but the core of this movement is really intelligent people like Michael Moore and Rachel Maddow, and very brilliant progressive people are at the core of this movement. I really think that we need, as Andrea says, we need to read more on the internet away from the mainstream corporate run media. We need to look at PBS and NPR and programs like this, internet radio, and places that are off the beaten track that are more telling the truth about what's going on. We need to be informed and aware. We also need to think of relocalizing ourselves and thinking more about our local economies, stressing organic farming and gardening and solar architecture and local entrepreneurial enterprises, innovation.
Not outsourcing everything.
Well, I mean, you look at Steve Jobs and Bill Gates. They innovated out of their garages when they were youngsters. I mean, they hardly had any money at all in terms of investing in their businesses. They innovated out of this is the American, the good part of America, are all these people that, you know, that started from scratch and innovated from that point of view. This is what is being basically crushed in this country by monopolies and banksters. So my feeling is that we have that spirit, and we need to relocalize, and we need to practice what needs to be practiced, and that is helping our neighbors, helping one another on a local basis, and creating the kind of world that we want to see, creating the kind of outcome on a small basis that we would like to see on a large basis someday. And the 100th monkey phenomenon could really occur, that enough smaller regions reignite their passion for these ideals and concepts, that they not only survive, but they thrive.
It's possible, isn't it?
It is, and I think that's what, if people would say, what do you really think? I really think that that's what's going to happen, that the world is going to be changed from the grassroots. There's a biblical saying, the first shall be last and the last shall be first.
And then the internet spreads information as fast as
fabulous. The internet spreads. We have the chance to reach each other. We have the chance to get ideas and news and information like nothing ever before in recorded history, ever, through the internet and through mass communications. And in a sense, it decentralizes everything. It's very, very hard for information to be hidden and exclusive now. Even the big companies, I mean, WikiLeaks and places like that, reported on our government, on our military, on the big banks and everything. This is eventually, the truth is going to bring these people down and out of power eventually. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to start locally. It's one of the reasons my husband and I moved to where we live today, because there is that kind of spirit where we currently live, which is in Ithaca, New York.
Well, I want to ask you about the economic world. People keep predicting that the dollar is going to be devalued.
Yes, I believe that is going to take. I think it's going to be a curious situation. As the economy worsens, commodities will probably go down for a while because people won't be able to afford to buy them. This is the thing, that commodity prices have been very high, and I have advised people to be in commodities for that reason. Oil closed today over $100 a barrel. I mean, oil has been up, gas has been up, the grains, the foods, the commodities have been very high. A lot of it is because if it's imported, the dollar is worth less and less and less. It's becoming more and more inflated. And Bernanke, head of the Federal Reserve, has to print money in order to pay our massive debts. And so the dollar will, I feel, become more and more devalued. It will cost more dollars to buy things. However, the irony is that commodity prices may be dropping. There's some astrological configurations that point to that. Commodity prices may be dropping because people can't afford to buy the gasoline. They can't afford to buy these commodities. So they may be down. The exception to that is gold and silver. And the reason gold and silver, I think, over the long term are going to be high up is because they're the only people will turn to gold and silver as money. Because of the devaluation of currencies all over the world, the euro, the European currencies are already devalued. The euro dollar is in trouble. In a knee-jerk way, people have been going back into the American dollar, raising it slightly. But as they discover that America is in as bad or worse shape as the European nations are, that's going to change. So my age-old sage advice is to be in gold and silver and cash. Mm. You hedge your bets this way. If you have cash, gold, and silver, you're going to play the odds.
Are there any countries that you think are going to escape this?
That's a good question. No. The answer, I don't think completely. The China is touted as the next great empire, and I do not believe so. People are getting sick in China. The pollution there is horrendous. The factory pollution, there's been no environmental laws, are making people sick. The Yangtze and Yellow Rivers are drying up because of the melting of the Himalayan glaciers, which have provided those aquifers for thousands of years. There are going to be major environmental trouble. The people are going to be sick. I think next year there may be some rebellions going on in China, some revolutions taking place there against the government. The difference is that China has not only no debt, they have a surplus. Remember, China is a communist dictatorship.
Right.
People forget this, that have allowed capitalistic enterprises there. And they have money, and they're heavily into gold, and heavily in this one lady talked about the transporting of coal across that area that they may be selling even to China, or that may be partially controlled by China. And Goldman Sachs is in on the deal because mm-hmm. Goldman Sachs makes a lot of money brokering deals with China.
And people here are really upset about having big coal trains coming through several times a day.
Absolutely, and I don't blame them. And I think mm-hmm. you have to fight it. You have to do. It's like the issue we have up here is fracking, which is in our area. We're in the Finger Lakes region of New York, and we have the wonderful Finger Lakes with these deep, wonderful lakes that supply water for all this great farming that goes on here and supplies it. And fracking could permanently poison the underground aquifers and the water systems here. And so the communities have banded together and outlawed it on a local basis. And they put so much pressure on the state as to stop the fracking process now, to have it reevaluated. So we may get ourselves exempt from it. See, there's
but it takes a lot of voices. So we're going to have to end this, unfortunately. So tell everybody how they can hear more and read more from you, Linda Sherman. You're such a wealth, my gosh.
Well, my book is What Next? A Survival Guide to the 21st Century, which I published in 2007,
book.
And you can get it off of Amazon, which predicts all of this stuff that we're going through now and more in the future. You can get to my newsletter, which is www.soothsayer.com. And I write that newsletter once a month on my website. It's free to everybody. It's right on the site.
And I love your website, Scott. What gold's going for right now? What's the rate for silver? What's the Canadian dollar?
Yes. Yeah, I have those graphs, the Kemco graphs on my website so that you see where everything is.
And you also have a marvelous line here, and I think of how we all got led to, we were all kind of numb and got led to this kind of disastrous time, and you've got 100,000 lemmings can't be wrong.
Right.
So thank you so much. People can get hold of you, lindasherman.com or soothsayer.com.
Correct.
And so you might want an astrological reading with Linda or just get a sense of what's going on the planet. Thank you for your calls, everyone, and thank you so much, Linda. I hope you'll come on again.
My pleasure, Veronica. It's always absolutely great to be on your show, and thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you. And good night, everyone. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your calls, and we'll get Linda back on again. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, next week we have Jackie Lapine, and she's written a book on manifesting and creating a reality during these times. So we'll see how she combats or counters Linda's awareness of what's going on in the global economic world. So that's tune in at 8 o'clock next Tuesday night for Jackie Lapine. And then this Thursday, I'll be on at 7 o'clock with Radiance by Design. It's also a call-in show teaching you meditations and raising your fields and frequency. And we do think of being a vibrational community with Radiance by Design, followed by Jackie Salvitti, ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. If any of you would like a session with me and my guides, Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com. I love to get feedback about our guests, like Linda. And any ideas you have for future guests or whatever, Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com. Even if you want to talk about Linda and find out about getting a session with her, you could email me. Good night, everyone. Take a deep breath and send blessings out to one another. Good night.